This is Horns Up. I'm Animesh.
And I'm Peter.
And apologies if you can hear a lot of ambience noise, because we're clearly in places which aren't conducive to recording at the moment. Yeah. But with that out of the way, let's get on with the episode. Today, we are talking to Rivers of Nihil, an American tech debt band from Pennsylvania, who have a new record coming out called The Work, which releases September 24th. That's next week. Peter, why are we talking to them?
So 3 years ago, Rivers of Nihil released an album called Where Owls Know My Name. And while I was a little late to the party on that album, I was really impressed with how, you know, they kind of reinvented the whole thought of tech debt. I mean, they introduced a saxophone into their music, which it's kind of unheard of in that space. But what I've also then started doing is listening to their other albums, and I noticed a progression on each album, how they continuously kind of push the envelope and kind of redefine their sound. So when they announced The Work, I was like, we definitely had to get them on the pod and get to know more about the album and what they're doing this time.
So let's get into that conversation then. Here is Brody Utley, who's on lead guitar and does a ton of other things for the band, including programming as well as recording the entire thing himself.
Hi, Brody. Welcome to Horns Up.
Thanks for having me.
You know, we're here to talk about your upcoming album, The Work. You know, how does it feel now that the album is releasing? Because I was reading up on what you said about the album, and you said that the amount of work you've described as obscene. So how does it feel that now it's finally being released?
It's weird, you know, because we've had these songs in the works for, you know, a year and a half or whatever. And I've been listening to this music, you know, on my own for so long and thinking about different ways to tweak it and improve it. And, you know, what kind of video will go with this and what kind of, you know, visuals will go with this and whatever. And now that it's finally happening, it's almost like, yeah, it's, I don't believe it, but I'm glad that it's happening, because the album has been recorded since November of last year. So it's been a while, but it feels great to have it, you know, finally coming out.
Sticking to that, I mean, I'm guessing like the pandemic and the lockdowns kind of had an impact on it, but were there any other factors that really affected the work?
We did sort of push things back just a little bit because of the lockdowns and the pandemic and everything. I think originally we were going to record in June and we ended up recording in November. We were all separated, of course, on this one more than we normally were. Our bass player, Adam, who, you know, is my main writing partner in the band, he moved to a different state, whereas he used to live right up the street from me, so we could kind of get together whenever we wanted. He moved to another state, so it made it a little bit more difficult, you know, with COVID and everything, to get together and like write things like we normally would. So there was a lot of this kind of thing, you know, video chats where we would be, you know, showing each other, you know, how to play stuff, or I would be sending him clips of songs and what do you think of this? Do you like that? Is that bad? Does this suck? You know? So there was a lot of like back and forth, between all of us in the band, about stuff this time, because we weren't able to like get together, you know, and practice or anything the way we normally would. So it ended up being a lot more work because of that. I ended up doing way more, you know, this time at my home studio than I had on previous releases, just because we had all, you know, nothing else to do. So why not just like invest all of that time into making the biggest possible, you know, record we could possibly try to make. So it was a different experience this time for sure, because of, you know, the current state of the world. I wouldn't say that it was a negative thing. I think if anything, it kind of it facilitated the energy of this record. I mean, it's a record about winter, you know, and with winter, you kind of think about, you know, isolation and, you know, being indoors and just kind of like not seeing a lot of people maybe. So like it really kind of like, you know, fueled the creativity in a lot of ways, the kind of inability to see one another the way we normally would have.
We were just going to ask you, and that was going to be our next question, as to whether the work would be about winter, considering the seasonal or the reoccurring seasonal aspect of, or the theme as such. So what happens next then, considering at the moment all the four seasons are pretty much through?
Well, I'm not, you know, I can't really say for sure, because this project was such a big one for us that we're still very much, you know, on this album and, you know, still kind of working on the release for this one. So we haven't really discussed what happens next. Our bass player, Adam, is kind of the conceptual guy in the band with, you know, he's the seasonal idea was his. So he usually is the guy that kind of, you know, brings up like a seed for an idea that turns into an album. So we're just gonna have to wait and see. A lot of what we do as a band is kind of inspired by you know, us going out and playing our music to live audiences, you know, and being able to like kind of like interact with a room and just see how people kind of like respond to our music and whatnot. I think a lot of our energy comes from that. So I think that, you know, I think that we're just going to have to wait and see how things go. Can't really say for sure what's next, but, you know, we'll see.
Of course. Cool. So let's talk a little bit more about the production and the fact that you spent so much of your time at your home studio getting these songs and this album to take life. I'd like to know what your process is like. I mean, can you kind of describe your quest for perfection at the home studio itself? And really having this much more time and the fact that you were pretty much doing it solo, did it really make you spend a lot more time than necessary? Or was it a boon in another way?
Well, I mean, generally how I do it is, you know, it's really just me sitting in front of my recording setup and, you know, whether it comes from a guitar line that I'm, you know, a simple melody is usually what it is. It's a very simple, you know, I'll put on like some, you know, really echoey guitar sound, you know, some big spacious guitar sound, and I'll just kind of like search for melodies. And if I catch anything that I find inspiring, then, you know, I'll record it. And then I'll kind of build stuff around it. You know, I'll bring in some, you know, percussion, and then, you know, maybe, like a, you know, a bass line or, you know, a guitar line on top of this, you know, melody. And then I just, that's kind of how I build songs. I'll take one very small, you know, idea, whether it's a rhythm or a melody, and I'll just kind of like build, you know, I'll build sections out of these little seeds. And, you know, by making each section, you know, as, you know, good as I could possibly make it, that's what kind of inspires me to write more of the song, right? So like oftentimes I'll write like the beginning of a song, and I'll add all the layers of instrumentation that I want to add, all the different sounds I want to add just for that section. And if I make that section sound as good as I can possibly make it sound, you know, it inspires me to make the next thing, I guess, right? It's kind of like a snowball effect, right? So that's usually how I write music, how I come up with songs, you know. Or if you know, me and another member are collaborating, like I know, for example, the second song on this new record, our bassist Adam and I kind of wrote that one together, and he sent me a phone recording of him kind of humming out this riff, and I just, you know, interpreted it based on what he had sent me on the voice recording, and then built a big section around it and kind of, you know, wrote each section of the song based on what I had already come up with. As far as the, you know, having more time this time, you know, at the studio here, you know, I think it just kind of, whereas before, when we would do records, I would write music, we would go to the studio, we would record it, it would get mastered, and then it would come out, and then we would go on tour. But this time, we recorded it, and then we spent like 5 months mixing it because we didn't really have any deadlines, you know? And during that time, I was able to kind of listen to the album, you know, even though it was technically done, and think like, oh, well, what else could I do to this to, like, you know, add kind of just a finishing layer of like polish, like the final layer of stuff that I could put on this to make it just like that 1% bigger sounding. So I think having the time was actually a positive thing, because I ended up adding a whole bunch of stuff after we recorded the album. I ended up adding a lot of different field recordings that I had taken, and a few other things, but these field recordings that turned out to be one of my favorite parts of this new album, because all of the recordings that ended up on the record are sounds from basically like the area in which we live. So it's like a kind of a deeply personal final touch that we added to the record. And had I not, you know, had all that time, I don't think I would have done that. I think that part of the record would have not made it onto the record.
On an extremely lighter note, how many versions of the mix did you guys go through, considering you had so much time on it?
Yeah, and like 5 months.
Yeah, 5 months.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it was
file number, version number, like what, 62 or something of that sort?
I mean, maybe. I mean, no, not 62, but, you know, and when I say 5 months, like, we weren't every day mixing.
Of
like,
course,
I live very close to the other studio that we went to, about a half an hour. So me and Carson, the engineer there, we would get together like, you know, once a week, and just like, I would bring a bunch of files, you know, new things that I had added, and we would kind of like blend it into the record. So yeah, I mean, I think from the time that we, you know, in November when the rest of the band went home until the actual final version of the album was done, I mean, we probably went through 10 or 15 versions, right? Just not that different from one another, but just with like little tweaks, you know, because there is so much going on this new record that we had to kind of like balance everything in like a certain way so that like nothing was like swallowing everything else, you know. The first mix we had was like almost what you're hearing now. It's just little tiny things and, you know, various different layers that we added on top of that made it, you know, have to go through several versions. But Carson and I are, you know, we're old good friends, so like I never felt like he was annoyed when I would be like, oh, I want to do this, you know? And, you know, he was always very, yeah, let's do it, you know? So I think having him, you know, just supporting me, I guess, my insane, you know, needs for this record, I think that was another underrated part of the process, was just his patience with me and his willingness to kind of like work with me on the final touches that we put on this record.
Awesome. Just as a final follow-up to wrap this particular section up, I have to ask you, was there any point in time where you were absolutely, and that tends to happen in the creative process, where you just don't like what you've produced, and then eventually you take a break and come back and listen to it and go like, hey man, this is actually pretty good?
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely, you know, there were songs that, when we went into the studio, you know, I was certain that like this song is going to be my least favorite, right? But it wasn't until, you know, because I just handle the music. I don't do anything with vocals. So I think having, you know, giving the music to the other, you know, to the other guys to kind of like add their touches to it, were, you know, that was like a big kind of refresher for me, because, you know, like I said, I was here in this room by myself for most of, you know, last year, and I was listening to the same songs, you know, playing the same stuff for that whole time. So yeah, of course, like, you know, I got burned out on it. But I think the major like boost in confidence and restored faith in the project was achieved through letting go of it, really, and kind of just like I did everything that I had to do, and then I handed it off to the other guys and the, you know, the producers as well. I think other people kind of like reacting and to what I had done, and like, you know, changing it to their, you know, changing it a little bit to like, you know, their specifications and adding their personal touches to it. That was what like kind of like boosted my confidence in the whole project. If I had, you know, if I was beginning to feel down on any of the material, once I heard everyone else in my band, you know, put their, you know, their spin on it, that's what like kind of made it, you know, fresh again for me.
Thanks for answering that.
Shifting towards the music, right? I mean, I'm just going to quote you from a previous interview where you said constantly relying on the familiar formula may work for some bands, but it doesn't work for us. Music is an art and art is ever changing. Without change, there's no progress. And without progress, the very fire that powers art and expression will die. So which brings me to my question. What's new for the listener on this album? I mean, I'm sure when the album was announced, everyone was like, are there going to be saxophone and the parts on this album also? So yeah, what's new other than what you've already told us, the field recordings?
You know, on our last album, a lot of people, you know, were shocked by how different that record was from our second record. And if I could make a comparison, like I would say that this new record is 10 times different from Where Owls Know My Name than Where Owls Know My Name was from our second record, right? You know, this new record, it's a real kind of like mood, energy, vibe kind of based record, as opposed to like technicality. Or granted, there are, you know, heavy technical intense moments on the record, of course, but I think there's, you know, on this record we have, you know, these big open cavernous sections that just like it almost sounds like you're stepping into a place, as opposed to just listening to a record. You know, you're just kind of surrounded by sounds. And I think just the sheer size of this album, as far as like all of the elements that make the sound that you're hearing, it's just so, there's so much more, you know, going on in this kind of like world of the work, I guess, than there was on Where Owls Know My Name, and a much greater emphasis on creating space as opposed to coming up with ways to fill space, if that makes sense. We wanted to take care and make sure that like we weren't overplaying when it wasn't necessary. You know, there is, you know, this isn't like breaking news or anything. It's, you know, it's in our bio that Metal Blade released, but there is saxophone on this record. But it's much different, you know, it's as opposed to just like a solo instrument. We kind of like painted it in as like just another, you know, another shade in the painting of the record. Like it's a lot of times it's like you're hearing it and it's like, oh, am I even hearing the saxophone? Or is that like, is it, it kind of just weaves in and out. And that was very intentional because we're aware of the fact that people have come to associate us with the saxophone, and we wanted to make sure that we weren't painting ourselves into a corner with that. So we wanted to still include it, but kind of take a different approach to it. We, instead of really planning out these sax solos like we did on Where Owls Know My Name, we basically just brought Zach Strauss in, who played sax on Owls. We brought him into the studio and just rolled the album, and he kind of just like reacted to it in real time. And we just like took our favorite moments from that, and that's what ended up on the record. So a lot of the sax on this record is more, it's just more of like another color in the painting, like I said, as opposed to a featured lead instrument. Granted, I think there's one song on the record where there is like a big epic, you know, sax moment. But for the most part, it's more of this like kind of like haunting sort of, you know, texture that just sort of like enhances the mood of the album. You know, we've got a lot of different instruments on this record that, you know, weren't on any previous ones. We have some orchestral stuff that was, you know, not part of any of our previous releases. We have a lot of synthesizers, we have a theremin on this record. You know, there's a song that's almost entirely acoustic, which is a new thing for us. We have a lot of piano on this record, which is something that, you know, I've been wanting to include on a Rivers album for a long time. You know, piano is like one of my favorite instruments. Actually, that was like my first instrument that I took lessons on was piano.
Oh, nice.
So yeah. So it's just, you know, it's really like, this record is very different because I don't think that we put any limitations on what we included on the final record. Like these songs that ended up on the album, it's literally everything that we wrote during the time during which this album was being worked on. Like there's not one thing on this record that like, you know, like I didn't throw anything out. Like this is just like, here's a snapshot into where we were at during this time. You know, maybe it doesn't, maybe it sounds, you know, unlike anything we've ever done before. Maybe it sounds like something that wouldn't even be on a death metal record, but like, we're going to put it on there because we want people to know like where we were at for better or worse, you know? So I know I'm kind of going on here, but there's, it's vastly different than Owls. Like, in a positive way, I think Owls was the best version of that sound that we could possibly do. So, you know, we didn't want to try to do better than that. We just wanted to do something, you know, on a different island, really, you know, like if Where Owls Know My Name is on this island, we're way over here on this other island now. It's just different, very different kind of project, you know, not better or worse. I mean, that's up to the listeners. It's different in a lot of ways. You know, if you just want to get down to the instruments, a lot of different instruments on this one. But we just, you know, we tried a lot of new stuff. You know, there's a lot too much to talk about, really. But, you know, from the first moment, you know, on the first song on this record, it's clear that like, this is a new record for us. You know, it's a new adventure, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that's just the entire way you'll have sequenced the album, which I think is a lost art, really. Like nobody really sequences it. And I really love how it kind of plays out with like the tower at the start and then like song 8, the tower 2. So you're like, okay, what's happening here? Right. Mm-hmm. And that kind of sets it. But I want to come back to talking about the work still, right? In a previous interview, you've said that it's a commentary on the contemporary state of the music industry. If you could just kind of tell us, what did you mean by that? I mean, what are your thoughts on the current dependency of like the metal scene or just music in general on digital and streaming platforms?
I can't really think specifically what it was that I was speaking in reference to on that quote, but you know, I could say that I think that's something that we do as a band that is sort of becoming like a lost art form, I guess, is what we were just talking about, is kind of like the sequencing of this album, like where, you know, a lot of bands kind of coming into the era of streaming, you know, a lot of bands kind of, you know, front load their albums with like, you know, the singles and the shorter songs on the front half of the album, because, you know, most people these days, well, not most people, many people these days, you know, the playlist mentality of like, oh, I don't like that, skip. Oh, I like that, thumbs up. Oh, yeah. I don't like that. They'll try it for 15 seconds and ditch it or like it, you know? And like, even though maybe it's like hurting us to not like write shorter songs and front load, you know, our albums with singles and shorter tunes. You know, I think that, I think that really we're just trying to like be, we're just like, we want to do our own thing. You know, we want to do what makes us happy and makes us feel, you know, satisfied as artists, I guess. And like, we all still are very much like, in love with the kind of the storytelling aspect of an album, right? You know, like sitting down and like putting on some headphones or whatever and just like going to a place as opposed to just consuming content, that word content, you know, as opposed to just consuming content, going on a journey, you know, like when you watch all three Lord of the Rings in a row or try to, right? It's a long it's a big, big undertaking. Yeah. But sort of like that, you know? Yeah, exactly. So like, you know, as opposed to watching, you know, 10 episodes of The Office, which like, I also like The Office, but like instead of watching 10 episodes of The Office, you watch, you know, Fellowship of the Ring, right? Like, you know, it might not have the instant gratification, you know, that you would get from like a shorter, more convenient bite-sized, you know, piece of media or whatever. But, you know, I don't think that I could release, you know, music knowing that I was releasing it for any other reason than like, I'm behind it, right? Like, I wouldn't want to release music that was like, you know, checks off these boxes of like, well, it fits these algorithms and, you know, hopefully we land this playlist and yeah, like we'll see the numbers, you know, like I'm, you know, to my detriment, like I'm not really a numbers guy. Like I gotta be behind something, you know, in here to put it out. And I know the other guys are like that as well. So I think that as far as commentary on the current state of the music industry, I don't know if like the concepts on the album that are discussed are necessarily a commentary, but like, I think that this album is like somewhat of a, our commentary on it in a roundabout way that like, we're just like not interested in participating in like these sort of like the algorithm shortcut, you know, shortcut method, really. We want to release music that like people can kind of, like I said, go on a journey with and like integrate into like their experience and interpret it the way that they want to interpret it and like make it their own, right? Which you could do with, you know, the other way, but like we feel like we can get our point across the best way possible when we do things, you know, in this sort of like longer, more sequenced and thought out kind of way.
And I think that clearly resonates with a lot of people. So at this point, since we've talked so much about the work, we'd like to play a song. Which one should we play from the album and why?
Probably Clean. That was a song that we decided to go with kind of as like the first taste of music because we, you know, we feel like it offers like a pretty, you know, stark contrast to what people have kind of grown to expect from us, I guess, based on the last record. It's a very different sounding song, but it also has, you know, it has a lot of the elements that people have come to like, you know, enjoy about our band, you know, the kind of like big cavernous atmospheric sound. And then like the contrasting, like, you know, moody, clean vocals and like super, you know, insane screaming vocals. And just like, you know, those big dynamics, like that was big thing that we wanted to focus on this record was having like really having dynamics, like having like the quieter sections be more, you know, subdued, like in volume, actually, like literally having the quieter parts quieter and the louder parts louder to create this like explosion and kind of like build up, you know, to these high points and then going back down. And Clean is like a perfect example of that. You know, it's a song that kind of like ebbs and flows and, you know, goes through many different kind of like, you know, transitions and peaks and valleys, you know, throughout the song. And it's pretty, you know, it doesn't represent the entire record, of course, but, you know, it's a good like intro into, you know, what you're getting yourself into, I guess.
I want your money, your time. I want your patience and your pride. I'm all restless in a manner, and I'm working all the time. So heaven help me. And the dollar defend me.
So that was Clean from the latest Rivers of Nihil. Brody, of course, we know that all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy. So considering this is the work, what is the play? Or what was the play?
Oof, like during the...
During making the work? Yeah.
Oof. Man, I don't know. I guess like it was making the record. I'm a dork, so like, I mean, like doing this is like what makes me happy. Like honestly, like during the you know, when I'm writing, like I find that I'm always in like, you know, better moods when I'm like getting work done, you know, creative work done. But I mean, like, you know, there wasn't much to do during this last year, so I mean, I spent, you know, most of my downtime, you know, going on walks with my girlfriend Caroline, you know, making food, you know, binging on horrible television shows. I mean, anything that I could do to kind of just shut my brain down from what I'm doing here and just kind of like go back into like, okay, like I'm not going to think about it. I'm just going to like turn it off and just be here doing this or whatever. So yeah, just, you know, nothing too crazy. I'm a pretty, I don't go out that much. I'm not a super duper social person. So yeah, just hanging out with my girlfriend and going on walks and making food, really.
Thanks for answering that. I must say, please be warned and please be wary of terrible puns about the work which will be headed your way because of the album title.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'm ready.
So I must ask, and I don't want to dwell on this too much, but there was last year, right, where everyone went into lockdown and you had like certain Netflix shows that did tremendously well and went viral, right? Did you kind of, what that were you referring to? Did you like give into like thrash reality TV and all of that?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think, well, I mean, if you're talking about Tiger King, then yeah, I mean, like, that's definitely like, that was one of the first things that I remember watching during lockdown, you know, because like, I think initially we thought it was going to last for like 2 weeks and we were like, oh yeah, whatever. Let's just watch something stupid, you know? We watched like, you know, all kinds of like, really like, you know, just horrible television, you know, like whether it's Tiger King or, you know, really awful like dating shows or, you know, cooking shows where Gordon Ramsay is screaming at people or, you know, Hoarders, like just any stuff like that. Yeah, it's like, I don't know, sometimes you want to watch like a real like really good movie or a really good show, and then other times you just want to watch like something that you don't even really have to think about. It's just like,
yeah,
crap, you know what I mean? So yeah. But yeah, there was plenty of garbage that was consumed during the lockdowns on television, for sure.
Okay, thanks for that. So coming back to the music, I mean, you know, let's be honest here, Where Owls Know My Name got rave reviews all across media, right? I mean, it made to quite a few best of the year playlists and even charted on the Billboard, right? Did all of that kind of play at the back of your mind while, you know, working on the work?
Not necessarily, like, when, you know, none of that went into like the actual like writing of it. I think it was just like, we were aware of the fact that more people were paying attention to our band than had been paying attention previously when we had released records. So we knew that whatever we did, we wanted it to be like big, you know. We wanted the visuals behind it to be, you know, really intense. We didn't even know what the music was going to sound like, you know, before it was written, of course. So we knew whatever we did, we wanted it to be very different from Owls, because as we had discussed, like, we're definitely, you know, we've done that sound already, you know, it's the best it was going to be was on that record. So we knew we wanted it to be different, but we knew we wanted it to be big no matter what it was, like big, you know, as far as how it sounds and all that. So I don't think that there was any pressure, you know, directly impacting like the writing. Like when I was writing, I wouldn't be like, oh, that doesn't sound like it's better than, you know, Owls. Like I have to get rid of it, you know. It was just more of like a general awareness that, like, you know, we had these people, you know, kind of behind us that were like excited to see what happened next. And we wanted to, you know, give them the best version of the band that we could possibly give them, you know, under the current, you know, in our current form, I guess. You know, whereas before it was kind of like, oh, let's write a record and put it out and see who likes it. You know, now it was kind of like we had like a fan base, really, you know, of people who were like excited to see what happened next. So we wanted to shock them and surprise them, and, you know, and give them the best version that we could of the band at the time.
Awesome. So one of the things I wanted to come back to is, you know, digital platforms, right? I mean, we talked initially about the pandemic and the lockdown and all of that. One of the things that you took to last year was Twitch, and you've been quite like active on there, I noticed. Do you think that, you know, streaming platforms like Twitch and others that have kind of spawned last year have a future now that, you know, we are seeing touring, taking baby steps in different parts of the world? I mean, things have opened up in Europe. We're seeing gigs. Bloodstock happened last week in there. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, I think it'll definitely continue. You know, I think that, you know, it's really, I mean, if you get down to it, I mean, it's really just like another medium for artists to market themselves through. You know, I mean, when Instagram came along, you know, at first it was just, you know, people using it, you know, bands hadn't quite jumped on. And then, you know, slowly they started trickling in. And now Instagram is like one of the main ways that bands promote themselves alongside of, you know, Twitter and Facebook and Bandcamp. So I think that the streaming thing is just another opportunity for artists to promote their work and to interact with their, you know, interact with people like on a more like direct kind of face-to-face sort of way, you know. It's bringing, I guess it's like bringing fans like even closer to like their favorite artists, you know, because like back in 2005, you know, you could listen to a band and, you know, the only time you ever see the member of that band is if you go and you see him at a concert or you read a magazine about him, you know. And then with the, you know, in the inception of social media, now people are able to write, you know, text, you know, to their favorite artists or whatever, and you know, get responses from them, right? And like now with streaming, it's like even more direct because it's like they're right there, you know, on a screen, you know, live, and you can just be like, what's your favorite pizza topping or whatever, you know. So it's like just another piece of the ever expanding puzzle, I guess, you know.
Having said that, what are your thoughts on Cameo, and would you do one?
I don't know. Like I don't know if I personally would, just because I think that one, at least for the time being, is like, and I don't know, maybe it's just because like I'm me and like I don't see myself as like, you know, a person who anybody would necessarily want to give money to say happy birthday to their friend or whatever. But like, I think that like Cameo is like, I don't know, maybe not for me right now, but, you know, I think that, you know, yeah, if I can pay, you know, Robert De Niro $100 to tell my girlfriend, you know, happy birthday, like that's awesome, you know? But yeah, I don't know. I mean, to be completely honest with you, I don't know much about Cameo. I just know that it's a platform that, you know, people can pay famous people to send videos to their friends with. So I guess I would have to say I probably need to learn more, but you know, I never thought I would stream on Twitch. You know, I kind of like turned my nose up at the idea of that many years ago. I thought it was like weird, you know, that like people could just watch you and like, you know, ask you stuff, but like now I'm doing it. So who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, I'd recommend going on Cameo. You'll be surprised who you find there, right? Because it's like, it's not just musicians, right? There's also sportsmen and, wrestlers and all of that. So it's quite interesting that way, the kind of people you find.
And for what it's worth, it's the only platform at the moment that's allowing us to hear new Megadeth music.
Oh, okay. Yeah, who, yeah. Megadeth. I actually remember seeing, you guys know the band Chon?
Yep.
Yeah.
I remember seeing, I think it was one of their guitar players. I guess one of their guitar players' moms is like a huge Kenny G fan, and they got Kenny G on Cameo to play the one guy's mom "Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas" on the saxophone, and then call her out by name and wish her a happy Christmas or birthday that was on Christmas, something like that. But yeah, incredible. That's amazing.
Right. Now for some exciting stuff, which is that you're playing live next month after, February 2020, if I'm correct. And you're touring with, Black Dahlia Murder, After the Burial, Carnifex, and Undeath. What are you looking forward to the most from the shows, I must ask you?
Probably just like playing with the guys. That's something that I didn't really think would like affect me the way that it did. Cause it's one thing to sit in a room and, create music on a computer. But like, not being able to go out there and interpret it, in a live setting. It's weird, and it's something that, I've been playing music. I've been playing in bands since I was 14. And like, this is probably the longest, break from that, from playing with other people, that I've had in, my whole journey with music. So it's, I think the thing I'm, looking forward to most is playing with the guys, because I think this new material is kind of going to give us a chance to learn new stuff about each other as musicians, because it is so different from our previous stuff. It's a totally different feel on a lot of this, on a lot of these new songs. So I'm looking forward to kind of just seeing how we interact with one another with this new stuff, because it is so different. And I think it's going to teach all of us, new things about ourselves as musicians playing this stuff live, because it kind of calls for a different set of musical muscles, I guess, because of how much of a departure it is from the previous record.
Right. And one thing I'd recommend is tap into Trevor from the Black Dahlia Murders playlist, because I have no idea how he kind of comes up or where he gets time to listen to all the kind of music he does, right? It's insane.
He's a true fan of heavy metal. I mean, that guy is just an encyclopedia of information, not just on like death metal either. I mean, he knows everything about, every like Def Leppard, weird deep cut Def Leppard album, and the guy's a musical textbook.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's really great to see the playlist that he puts out. So I'm wondering what he's going to put out up post tour, because that's one of the ways you discover new music also, right?
Yeah, he's been doing that for years. He used to do it with Metal Injection, I think.
So I
think it's awesome that he does that, because when I was, getting into heavy metal, like I didn't have, we didn't have stuff like that, like just your favorite artists showing you their favorite music, it was just a lot of like surfing, forums and like downloading stuff on LimeWire or Napster or whatever, and like waiting a week for one song to download that sounds like crap anyway, So yeah, it's way different now. Very different.
Yeah. All right, Rudy, final question. Considering your experience as a journalist, what's one question that you'd like to be asked, but just don't ever get asked?
I don't know. I guess I would like to be asked about why I like cats so much, I guess, okay. And tell people about the complexities of being a cat guy in a world dominated by dog guys. Maybe, I don't know.
Okay, so why are you a cat guy? Or tell us more about you being a cat guy.
Well, I grew up in a household where my parents would foster greyhounds, and greyhounds are these enormous, gigantic, you know, dogs. They're great. But you know, we had five or six of them at a time sometimes, and they got a little insane. So that's part of the reason. But most of the reason is because I feel like with cats, you just really got to work with them. And you gotta earn their, you know, you gotta earn their trust. You gotta learn their kind of like intricacies of their personality. Cats are a lot like learning about other people, you know. And sometimes they're temperamental, so you gotta back off. But I don't know. I just like the side of cats where you have to, you just kind of have to put the work in. No pun intended. But you have to put the work in with them. Whereas like, I find that a lot of the times with dogs, and I love dogs too, but I find that you could go to anyone's house and their dog will jump up on you and, you know, lick your face. Whereas like the cats might be kind of in the background, like who the hell is this, you know? And I think that there's a certain level of satisfaction that you get as a cat owner when your cat, you know, trusts you, but then when someone new comes along, they're not so sure, and that's how you know that you've made it in with them, you know, is when they trust you but not the other person. So this is getting really deep psychology stuff, you know. I don't know, I did not expect to talk. See what I mean though? Like you said what question have you not been asked? And I said that, but like now I don't really think I have a great answer for it. So I'm going to have to think about it, but maybe that, or why I like spaghetti so much. I don't know, but I don't have a good answer for that one either. But thinking of ridiculous, you did well. Stuff now.
Yep. No. All right. You did well. Thanks for entertaining us with that answer. And thank you overall for sparing some time out and chatting with a couple of boys from Bombay, India.
This is my first interview that I've ever done for a publication from India. So this is this is cool. It's good to talk to you guys.
Same here.
Take care.
Okay, realistically, Peter, do you think Rivers of Nihil's The Work is going to be one of the standout releases of this year?
It's a bit too early as yet to say, because I've only kind of heard the album for the last month or so since we got an early copy of it. But I will tell you this, it's definitely going to be one of the most talked about albums, especially the whole, you know, clean part that they've introduced, the whole ambient part. Everyone's going to be like, what the fuck are they doing? And it's going to be definitely one of the most talked about albums for this year, for sure.
Okay, let's hold you to that statement. And we'll revisit that statement in a couple of weeks and see how well that has matured as such. Are you guys looking forward to this release? Why don't you let us know? Chat us up at hornsupport.com, or we are on Twitter at hornsupport. As always, I'm on Twitter at Asmawani.
I'm at Trendcrusher.
And this is Horns Up.
Horns Up, guys.